It's Ideasphere with author Julia Shopik, Honest Medicine.
Most doctors are trained. They're not educated. They're actually trained very early not to think outside the box, to just accept what the professors tell them and to just accept what they read about in their medical journals. This is Dr. Berkson's theory.
It's not often that someone is willing to take on the major pharmaceuticals and medical industry at the same time. That's what happened, though, with Julia Shopik following the death of her husband from a brain tumor. First, she says, we have to pay attention to our instincts, then become empowered when dealing with the healthcare system. Hello, I'm Guy Rothbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices with author Julia Shopik. Her book, Honest Medicine, Effective Time-Tested Inexpensive Treatments for Life-Threatening Diseases. It's the result of several years of research. Ms. Shopik joins me for this program. Thanks for taking this time.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Guy. I really appreciate it.
In your experience that you went through all these trials with your husband, this is what led you to Honest Medicine. Would you like to give the background of that for clarification?
First off, I want to say that with my personal background, I really tried to stay away from the medical profession, from the medical industry, so to speak. Two things. My dad was a doctor back in the so-called good old days of medicine in the 50s and 60s, and he warned me that things were bad then, even though people now look back and say they were terrific back then. He said they were bad then, and they were going to get worse. That was his message to me over and over and over. And my mom also was a big believer in alternative medicine, in holistic medicine. So between the two of them, I kind of got the message, you know, to stay away from conventional medicine as much as I could. But in 1990, I was not able to do it anymore. My husband was diagnosed with a very serious brain tumor, an astrocytoma 3. For any of your listeners who know, that's very serious. It's cancerous, of course. And it was the size of an orange. At that point, we could not just stand there and hope it would heal. It was not going to by itself. We were terrified. We did exactly what the doctor said, no more, no less. He had surgery, he had radiation, and then he had chemotherapy. And I was still terrified, as was my husband, of course. Something happened, though. We began to notice that he was experiencing every side effect that could happen. And I want to stress this, from the treatments, not from the tumor, because that had been taken out. He was experiencing, oh my goodness, hydrocephalus, which is water on the brain, and they had to do other operations to take care of that and put a shunt in. He was experiencing a radiation-caused stroke. Radiation to the brain, to the head, can cause a stroke. He was 40 when his tumor was diagnosed. All of a sudden, I woke up, and I said, you know, in order to keep this man, he had already outlived his prognosis. The doctors had given him 18 months to 3 years. And said, you know, he's doing well in spite of them. You know, he's having all of these side effects, but indeed he's surviving. So I said, if I find some integrative treatments, some holistic treatments, then his chances of a happy survival will be much, much better. So I did. I found a nutritionist named Dr. Jean Wallace, whose area was cancer, and her special area was brain tumors. I was very much in luck there. She began to really change the way he ate, the way the supplements he took, and he started to flourish. This was wonderful. What I found was that the doctors were not at all interested in anything we were doing. And the doctor asked, what medicines are you on? And he told him all the anti-seizure medications. And then my husband, Tim, said, but I'm also on a lot of supplements. And the doctor said, next question. He was not at all interested in anything except for the treatments that he himself or the other doctors had prescribed. This was kind of upsetting, but you know what? I really didn't care since they weren't stopping me from doing these things, but things changed in 2000, 2001. He had a recurrence of the tumor. And I want to stress that usually these recurrences come really quickly after the first diagnosis, after the first tumor. But his took 10, 11 years to come back. And at that point, I tell the story in my book, In Honest Medicine, about how his skin just wasn't healing and all of the things we went through. In the beginning, he had a lot of non-healing skin from 1990, 1991, 1992. So when 2000 and 2001 came along, I actually went and had an appointment by myself with the doctor. And I said, I don't think it's a good idea for him to have the surgery. And the doctor said, oh, no, 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 it's going to be a piece of cake. I think he meant for him because the tumor was near the surface. But he didn't mean for my Tim. And what happened was a disaster. Tim had the surgery. He walked into the surgery telling jokes in a great frame of mind. We actually thought that he had done well because he did really well for a while, and then all heck broke loose. His skin started to open up. And long story short, he had 8 additional surgeries over the course of 8 months in order to find 2 pieces of skin that would hold together. One of the surgeries, he had grafts taken from all over his body to try to get the skin to heal, and it would not. And with each surgery, I want to stress, it was an assault on his body. The man who had walked into the surgery telling jokes after 8 additional surgeries was now bedbound, almost totally paralyzed, and he was definitely so much more compromised than when he walked in.
At this point, you were introduced to a holistic doctor and Silver Lawn.
Yeah, working with a client, I met a holistic doctor named Dr. Carlos Reynas, who told me about a treatment called Silver Lawn. This was a wound healing system that was pieces of material impregnated with silver ions. And by the way, FDA approved for all non-healing wounds. With my PR skills, I called the president of the company. I got them to donate this treatment. I also, God knows how I did it, I convinced the doctor. My husband was in the hospital at this point. I convinced his neurosurgeon to let me put Silver Lawn on his head. And I say let me because you're kind of like a prisoner in the hospital and the doctors have control. The doctor let me put Silver Lawn on his head, and it was an amazing guy. His skin started to heal literally overnight. And this is where I got my big aha moment, you know, with all the bings and bangs and everything. I thought that the doctors would be happy that finally my husband was healing. You know, he was now very brain injured and paralyzed, but he was healing. They weren't. I was puzzled because one doctor, I was wondering why the doctors don't look happy. You know, usually you look happy when a patient is getting better, but one doctor expressed it to me. He said, you know, I don't think it was the treatment that you found that helped your husband. I said, what? What do you mean? What do you think it was, doctor? And he said, I've been thinking it was the vancomycin, that's the IV antibiotic that Tim had been on for at least 6 weeks, that it was kicking in. I was stunned. I said, but he's been on vancomycin for 6 weeks. He says, yeah, it kicks in. And he reiterated the fact that it kicks in. That was the moment I knew that, you know, my husband lived for another 3.5 years, and I was taking care of him. Now he was bedbound. He was an invalid. And I was trying my best to find treatments that would bring him back. And he still had his great sense of humor. But during that time, I was percolating in my brain, I've got to help other people. Other people are not going to learn about treatments. If we had learned about it earlier, our lives would have been very different. If we had learned about Silver Lawn earlier, and I just said, I've got to help people find treatments that their doctors won't tell them about that are better than the treatments their doctors are using. So that's the genesis.
One would have expected a backlash when you started referring to the medical community as not accepting anything but their recommendations.
Yeah, I knew that people wouldn't believe that doctors would try to deny it, you know, because other patients were coming in with non-healing skin. And if the doctors would not believe that the Silver Lawn had worked, they would not be helping their other patients, and their other patients would die. Tim was going to die if we hadn't found Silver Lawn. So I decided that our story wasn't enough, and I decided to find four treatments, three others, other than Silverlon, for a book which I later was to call Honest Medicine, after the name of my blog, which is also honestmedicine.com. I found three other treatments which fit very high criteria. They had to be around for at least 25 years. They had to have helped thousands of patients. They had to have champions, both doctors and patients, who were devoting their lives to getting the word out about these treatments. And very important, they had to be inexpensive, because we had gone broke finding treatments for my husband. And most people do go broke when there's a life-threatening illness. And that's the fourth point. They had to be treatments for very life-threatening diseases. I wasn't interested in any treatment for a cold or for warts or for anything, you know, that was going to heal by itself. They had to be illnesses that were life-threatening, things like those serious autoimmune diseases like liver damage, epilepsy, non-healing wounds. They had to be treatments for very, very serious illnesses. And here's another thing, that the standard of care medications aren't working very well for. So that's the story of how Honest Medicine came into being. I can tell you the story of some of these treatments that I found. One of them, low-dose naltrexone, has just become a cause célèbre. I get at least one call and one email every day when I'm not doing radio shows. When I am, I get way more than that. The low-dose naltrexone is for autoimmune diseases. There are probably, at last count, at least 170 autoimmune diseases. And this low-dose naltrexone has been shown to be helpful to actually work very well on a great number of them. So this makes a huge portion of the public that wants to hear about low-dose naltrexone but will not hear about it from their doctors. And it is a very inexpensive, very wonderful treatment.
I want you to repeat the website once again and your blog. Anything else where folks can get some information?
My website is honestmedicine.com. If you go to honestmedicine.com, there will be links to all the different ways that my book is published. And my email, should anyone want to write to me, they often do, mostly to find out where they can get the treatments that are in my book in Honest Medicine. But that's Julia at honestmedicine.com.
Good. Well, I'll have that information at the end of the show as well. This is Ideasphere. Guest Julia Shopik. The book is Honest Medicine. Something that I found of interest in the preface by Dr. Bergson, he became a biologist who then went back to school to get his medical license. And he brings up a very fine distinction between medical training and education.
Dr. Bergson, as you pointed out, got his PhD first and then decided to get his MD degree. It was so cute the way he describes it, because he says that when he was a student getting his PhD, whenever he'd ask a question, they'd say, oh, ask more questions. This is wonderful. One of his professors actually told him, if you disagree with me, this is in his PhD school, as he likes to say, in his graduate school, please disagree with us. That makes it more exciting if we have conversations. So he went into med school with the same attitude, and he raised his hand and asked questions. And he was taken aside by one of his professors, and he was told, you better stop that, because if you keep asking questions, you're going to be booted out of med school. Your job, he was told, is to listen to what we tell you and to spit it back. This, Dr. Bergson says, is the difference between training, which is what you get in med school, versus education, which is what you get when you're in many good graduate school programs. His theory is that most doctors are trained. They're not educated. They're actually trained very early not to think outside the box, to just accept what the professors tell them and to just accept what they read about in their medical journals. And they're not going to read about any treatments that 90% of the clinical trials are financed by, guess who? Big Pharma. So in their medical journals, they're not going to learn about cutting-edge treatments that are like those that are in my book, in Honest Medicine. They're going to learn about the treatments that are produced by Big Pharma. This is Dr. Bergson's theory, and it was later borne out in his personal experience when he found a treatment called intravenous alpha-lipoic acid, which is one of the treatments I feature in Honest Medicine for liver disease. He found that treatment for patients of his when he was an intern. He used it when he was told to not do anything outside the box. He used it on his patients, revived them. They had end-stage liver disease and was told never to do that again because he had stepped outside the box and he had given them treatments that were not in the hospital formulary. That's a whole big story that Dr. Berkson tells in Honest Medicine about how he came to treat these patients, found intravenous alpha-lipoic acid, and how he almost got himself in real trouble by using it, by saving two patients' lives and then more. So this is a very sad state of affairs.
Author Julia Shopik, her book, Honest Medicine, Effective, Time-Tested, Inexpensive Treatments for Life-Threatening Diseases. You can see more of her work at honestmedicine.com. This is Ideasphere. I'm Guy Rothbun. We'll be right back. We're back with Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. I'm Guy Rothbun with guest author Julia Shopik, Honest Medicine, Effective, Time-Tested, Inexpensive Treatments for Life-Threatening Diseases. One of the treatments that really caught my attention, it had been used since the 1920s, and it's a diet.
Yep.
And yet it was overlooked, even though the Mayo Clinic and John Hopkins were using it extensively in the 1920s and 30s, it was decided later that we'd be better off with pharmaceuticals.
Well, that's an interesting story, too. You're talking here about the ketogenic diet, which
yes.
is a very high-fat, low-protein, low-carb diet that, for some reason, mimics fasting. And even in the Bible, Jesus was asked how he stopped a man's seizures, and he says, with prayer and fasting. The ketogenic diet was the standard of care in the 1920s on at both Hopkins and at Mayo Clinic. And then in the 40s, anti-seizure medications came on the market. And guess what? The diet didn't stop, but it almost stopped. One of the heroes of my book, of Honest Medicine, usually they're physicians, right? The heroes, the doctor
sure.
stepped outside the box, like Dr. Berkson and Dr. Bahari, whom we'll talk about later. But this person, I decided, there was a doctor who died recently, Dr. John Freeman, who championed the diet. But I am convinced that it was a layman, Jim Abrams, a Hollywood producer, director, writer of the movie Airplane, you know, that's
yes.
my hero for the ketogenic diet and the hero of many.
Yes, the Charlie Foundation is his work
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Because in 1994, Jim's infant son, Charlie, developed what we call intractable seizures. These are seizures that won't quit. One seizure ends, a new one begins. Another one begins. At one point, little Charlie, 1 year old, was getting 100 seizures a day. And the way Jim puts it, our house was full of tears. Our home was full of tears. And Jim, being the Hollywood, you know, big shot, was able to afford the best of the best of the best.
Sure.
You know? He was able to go to the best places, to travel to the best places, to find the best doctors. One after another, put little Charlie on anti-seizure medications. And at one point, Charlie was on, I believe it was 4 or 5 at the same time. And there is a link in my book, in Honest Medicine, to a video where you can see little Charlie with a harness on his back because he was bumping into walls, literally was, and had to be harnessed in because he was so drugged. And Jim went to the library one day. Remember, this was before the internet. And he decided to do research, not to find another treatment. He wasn't that sophisticated yet. He was just looking to find some way that his family was going to survive living with a child who just wasn't going to get better. The intro to Jim's contribution is a quote from a doctor that basically said, you know, this kid has no hope. All we could do is to keep drugging him or to do a surgery on his brain. No hope at all. And so Jim went to the library. What does he find? He finds a diet that you mentioned before, the ketogenic diet that's been around since the 20s. So he got excited. There were small studies done from the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, all the way through the 90s. They were about how the ketogenic diet stopped seizures in children. And he brought them to the doctor, and his doctors all said, don't do it, it won't work. And Jim says, to my everlasting shame, I listened to them one last time, and I allowed them to do a surgery on my baby's brain. They did the surgery. He said, there's nothing more pathetic than watching your little baby. He says it was like a lump on the bed as they were carrying him in. And he said he came out of the surgery, he had more seizures, and at that point, Jim said, enough. You know, he finally got the message. And he and his wife, Nancy, took little Charlie to Johns Hopkins, where they administered the diet. 48 hours later, his seizures stopped. And Jim was so excited at first, and then he got furious. He said, why didn't I know? Why did they discourage me? Not only did they not tell me, but when I found it, they discouraged me. And then, light bulb time, why aren't other people being told about it? And he went on a mission. The first thing he did was to put out an instructional video about the ketogenic diet. He got his good friend Meryl Streep to do the video. And one of the staff that was hired to do the video was also working on Dateline NBC. He said, this is one cool story. So he called his bosses up at Dateline NBC, and Dateline NBC said, this sounds like a wonderful story, you know, how a diet cured seizures in a little baby, about 1 year old at this point. And they said, let's do a story on Dateline NBC. Well, they did. They did a two-part story, and I have linked to it in Honest Medicine in my book. And then all heck broke loose, and Jim got stories and letters. How do I get the diet? What am I going to do? My story is just like your story. They're drugging my child. And Jim started the Charlie Foundation, Charlie Foundation.org. And his mission became to educate people about the diet. And also not only to educate them, but don't forget, remember I told you that the diet had all but fallen out of favor? He had to get other staff in other hospitals around the world educated about it in order for people to get the diet. So he hired a dietitian named Beth Zupik-Kenya, who contributed some information to my book, and Beth came on board with him. By the way, I do want to mention the dietitian at Johns Hopkins, Millie Kelly. She also contributed to my book. Both of them have a mission to get the word out about the diet, but she's no longer working at Johns Hopkins. But Beth Zupik-Kenya and Jim are spreading the word. And Jim says, now I can go to sleep. There are over 100 hospitals worldwide and growing every day that have ketogenic diet programs. I should say that anyone listening who says, oh, my kid has seizures, I'm going to put him on a low-carb, high-fat diet, don't do it. It needs to be started in a hospital. It needs to be calibrated by professionals because each child's diet will be a little bit different from another child's, just variations. And it's very serious. One of the stories that is told, contributed to Honest Medicine, is by Jean McCauley. And she tells how when the diet was administered incorrectly, her child had terrible side effects, went into almost a coma. So it needs to be started in the hospital, but Jim is making sure that hospitals are knowing how to do it. And it's a wonderful story.
Honest Medicine is the book. It's unfortunate we don't have more time here because there are so many stories Is there one in particular we can wrap
this
up with?
Yes, I'd like to wrap it up with the low-dose naltrexone. This is a wonderful treatment, low-dose naltrexone. It's a treatment that works for many people with all sorts of autoimmune diseases. The people that got on board first were people with multiple sclerosis, people with lupus, people with rheumatoid arthritis, people with fibromyalgia. But literally, it was started because Dr. Bernard Bihari was working with drug addicts in the 1970s and 80s in New York City. And he was a big shot in New York City government working with drug addicts. And in 1984, naltrexone was FDA approved for drug addicts. And it was approved at very high doses, and at very high doses it was toxic. If people took the high-dose naltrexone in the morning, that if they then went and took heroin, the heroin would not make them high. So it was supposed to discourage them. But Dr. Bihari found that when he gave it in these high doses, it made people crazy. He said, but he noticed that it had a wonderful effect on the immune system. He was a curious doctor, unlike so many doctors today. He said, how low can I give this drug to make it so that it has endorphin-raising capabilities, by the way, in so doing, makes the immune system work better, and also will work on the immune system without the side effects. And he found that he could go as low as 3 milligrams, and it would have wonderful effects. A lot of his drug addicts had HIV/AIDS, and he found that when he gave it in low doses, the HIV/AIDS stopped progressing. Word got around. He began to give it to people with MS, with lupus, with all the conditions I described, and more asthma, Hashimoto's thyroid disease, all of these. And they were doing very, very well. In some cases, it actually reversed the disease. It didn't do that with MS. For some reason, it just stops the progression. It can't really undo the harm to the myelin sheath that MS does. But in some cases, it actually reverses it. There are cases of Parkinson's where people have almost had a reversal of all of their symptoms with low-dose naltrexone. And it's made by compounding pharmacies. It's dirt cheap. I mean, it's like $20 to $30 a month. And this low-dose naltrexone, its only symptom that people have noticed, a side effect, is vivid dreams. So I'm on a mission to also, like Jim Abrams with his ketogenic diet, to get the word out about this inexpensive drug. People are suffering. They're suffering with the autoimmune diseases, and they're suffering with the treatments that are being given for them. And this is important. Our healthcare system or disease treatment system is going broke, paying for treatments like Remicade. These are very expensive treatments. As a matter of fact, some treatments for multiple sclerosis, there's one that is, I believe it's called Galenia, and it's $60,000 per patient per year. And LDN, low-dose naltrexone, is about $500 per patient per year. Quite a bit of difference.
Julia Shopik, thank you so much for this.
Thank you so much. I'm writing a book now, by the way, Guy, totally about low-dose naltrexone.
That's terrific. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye. My guest has been Julia Shopik, author of Honest Medicine. You can see more of her work at honestmedicine.com and check out our Facebook page as well. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.